Welcome to Safety First, TÜV SÜD's podcast on cybersecurity and more. I'm Sabine Krömer from Corporate Comms at TÜV SÜD. Today I'm joined by Jochen Eisinger. He is Director of Engineering at Google Chrome. We will talk about third-party cookies and why they are not longer supported by many web browsers. Is this the end of tracking? Welcome to our podcast, Jochen. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Sabine.
Google announced an effort in 2019 to improve privacy on the web called Privacy Sandbox. And by 2023, Google plans to phase out support for third-party cookies. Now, why did Google decide to do this?
Yeah, so I think on a high level, there are two reasons. Like on one hand, one thing we're observing is that the expectation of users when it comes to online privacy and especially to tracking protection has changed over time. And so people do expect more and better privacy protections for themselves when they're browsing the web. So this is one thing that has changed. And another thing that has changed is that also what is possible from a technology point of view has changed, right? So there's new technology being developed. One such area, for example, is of differential privacy. And taken together, we think that we can offer a better experience to our users, an experience where their privacy while browsing the web is significantly better protected, while at the same time enabling a vibrant web ecosystem and enable content creators and websites to continue to monetize.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very interesting. And we go more into detail on what you just said. So one of the main drivers is privacy, when I understood this right. And for a better general understanding, what are third-party cookies at all? Can you give a short explanation?
Yeah, so a cookie is a small crumb of information. You can think of it as a very small file that a website can store on your computer. And the next time you visit that website, this small file is transmitted by the browser together with the request to the website. And this is a very old technology, so it's very generic, but it underpins a lot of the user experience we do expect today, so that you can, on a shopping site, you can put something in your cart and it doesn't disappear. You can store preferences, for example, what kind of language you would like to read the website in. But it's also used for other technology, which includes advertising and tracking.
Are there also other kind of cookies, like second party or first party or something like that?
Yeah, so people commonly talk about first-party cookies and third-party cookies. I think there's in the context of a web browser, nothing like a second-party cookie. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it's always the same cookie. So this distinction between first-party and third-party is a distinction in which context a given cookie is sent. So when I'm visiting a website, so for example, the website of TÜV SÜD, then this would be the first party. It's the website I intend to go to, and I will see the URL of the website in the location bar of my browser. But TÜV SÜD might include resources from so-called third parties to enable the site. So typically what we see there might be in analytics. It might be that you're hosting videos on a different content distribution network. And from the browser's point of view, that's a third party because it's not the site that the user intended to go to, but it's sites that or partners that the site is using to offer a rich web experience. And if a cookie is sent to this first party, in this example, TÜV SÜD, we would call it a first party cookie, even though it's the same cookie, right? Mm-hmm. And all of the resources that TÜV SÜD is using, we would consider a third party. And to give you a concrete example, it might be that you host your videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you visit YouTube as a user, and in that case, YouTube is the first party. But if TÜV SÜD includes a YouTube video on their site, in that context, YouTube would be a third party. And it's the same cookie that's being sent to YouTube, but once it's a first party cookie and once it's a third party cookie or third party context, that the same cookie is used in.
You mentioned a better user privacy and also a better user experience. Can you elaborate a bit more on that? In which way will it be a better user privacy, for example?
Yeah, so to answer the question, maybe I should first explain what is wrong with cookies and why are we talking about deprecating cookies, right? So what one thing you can do with such a third-party cookie is that if one given third party, so for example, an ad network is included on many different sites, they will see this third-party cookie that belongs to that ad network appear on many different sites. That allows an ad network or any other third-party resource that is used on many different sites, that allows them to piece together browsing history. Mm-hmm. And this is really how we commonly define tracking. So a party is tracking you if they have the ability to piece together your entire or large parts of your browsing history. And from our point of view, or from a user's point of view, really, this is an invasion of your privacy, right? Like you might not want to share the entire browsing history with a third party, right? Mm-hmm. That because your browsing history might include, you might on the one hand go shopping for something, but on the other hand you're researching something related to an illness or so, and you don't necessarily want to have that information connected. But so this kind of piecing together of browsing history is what we consider tracking, and it is currently enabled by third-party cookies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So to be clear on this, or do I understand it right, that in the future, if there will be no more third-party cookies allowed on the browsers I'm using, so this will also mean it's more comfortable for me because I don't have to give my consent all the time? Is that so, or...? Because nowadays it's really quite annoying, but at least you have a choice.
Yeah, so you're raising a very interesting point there, and unfortunately, I don't have like a definitive answer for you there yet. It is an interesting question of like what kind of consent would you need in a world where we have the so-called privacy sandbox in place. It might depend on a lot of factors. But unfortunately, it's too early to really talk mm-hmm. about what the consent experience
will there has like. To be a consent, of course.
I mean, consent is typically regulated quite precisely by states. Yeah, and so I don't think that we as a browser maker are in a position to make forward-looking statements about what consent frameworks will look like in the future.
Okay. But I'm just aiming at the fact that the consent is not vanishing. There has to be consent still, also when there are no third party cookies anymore, right?
That depends on what regulators will tell us in the future.
It's still everything under construction, like we can say. What is next? What will be there?
Yeah, so as I described earlier, third-party cookies are really the underpinning of the modern web, right? So, we talked a lot about tracking now, but they're also your sign-in state, they're your preferences, like your shopping cart. And so what we want to avoid is breaking all of that, right? Mm-hmm, like, because mm-hmm. that would significantly and have a significant negative effect on the user experience by browsing the web.
Yeah.
So what we're doing instead, and like another downside of cookies is that it's very opaque, where like it's a file, the browser has no insight into what is in that small file, how it's being used. And so mm-hmm, what we're doing instead is that we're looking at the individual use cases and are building APIs or web APIs into the browser that enable the websites to continue to operate the way they do today, but by moving from this opaque identifier that the cookie is to purpose-built APIs, what we can do, we can ensure that there are certain privacy guarantees met that in with those APIs. And so really that is the idea of the privacy sandbox that we are developing together with the community at large in the standards process, a set of APIs that replace use cases that are currently being fulfilled with cookies in such a way that we can give privacy guarantees about, like, it's not going to be possible to track you in the sense of building your browsing history, as I described earlier.
Can you elaborate a bit more about this privacy sandbox concept? How is it set up? You said it is a community concept, so it's kind of an open concept.
Yeah, I mean, that is in general how we are developing the web platform. There are standardization bodies. So for HTML and web APIs in general, that's typically either the W3C or the WOTWG. These are two big standard bodies. And the way these bodies operate is that they're building groups, working groups or community groups, interest groups, different kinds of groups where browser makers, but also subject matter experts or other companies are coming together, and they're discussing proposals of how to implement certain parts of the web or kind of shape the future shape of the web. And in during that process, there's the different participants can either comment on proposals, they can introduce their own proposals. The different constituents of such a group, they might try out proposals. Like often it's like it's easier if you have data, you can say, well, like it's actually working or it's not working, and then you can iterate and try to improve. And so that's the process we are going through there. It's very important for us that it's an open and collaborative process, and it's not that we have a fully thought out ready solution that we just now want everybody to adopt.
Okay, so it's a process, and you are interested in involving other stakeholders and the community. Can you explain a bit what's technically behind the Privacy Sandbox? How does it work?
Yeah, so the Privacy Sandbox is kind of an umbrella term. Often in the field of computer, when you talk about the sandbox, it's a concept that comes from security, right? Like you're building a kind of boundary in which it's safe to kind of stay, and you try to guarantee things about the boundary. So like Chrome, for example, has a security sandbox where we're isolating individual websites from each other. So if one website is malicious or has a defect, it does not affect other websites. And so from the Privacy Sandbox, the idea here is similar. We want to build a set of APIs. So let me give you a concrete example, right? So we talked a lot about ads, and one API that got a lot of attention recently is the so-called Flock API, Federated Learning of Cohorts. And the idea there is to give advertisers a way of grouping users into interest categories without having to track individual users, right? So often, you know, typically an ad is not targeted at you personally, but it's targeted at thousands or tens of thousands of people. And so we said, well, like with the cookie, you can be tracked personally, but it's not necessary. It's enough if thousands and tens of thousands of people that are like you are seeing ads from an advertiser. And so this is what the Flock API does. But, you know, as I said, third-party cookies have a lot of users. So another use case we're looking at is the so-called trust token API. So what the problem we are trying to solve here is that websites have to make a decision whether they trust you or whether they think you're an attacker or you might be a bot that tries to abuse the website. And often this is done by looking at your browsing history. Do you have a browsing history like built via third-party cookies that looks like a browsing history from a realistic human or not? And again, we don't want to have this browsing history to be built. And so instead, we're providing this trust token API. It's a very interesting zero knowledge proof based API. So if somebody's really interested in the underlying math, it's worth a read. And so with these APIs, we're building this boundary in which we want the web to stay. So it is privacy preserving.
These are, you just described some alternatives that could take the place of the third-party cookies, right? Did I understand that right?
Yes.
But it's not ready to use concept that you are delivering to the market. You want to keep it open and collaborative.
Yeah, so the different APIs that are part of the Privacy Sandbox are all in different stages, right? So Flock, for example, was an API where we're actively looking for feedback from the community and have some proposal how it might work. Trust token, I believe, is a bit further along, and because that's building on an existing technology that already exists on some websites. And so the different proposals are all in various stages.
Okay, so for the end user, how How will the future look like? Will that it will be more comfortable and there will be more privacy, right?
So I'm not sure whether it's going to be more comfortable just because of the privacy sandbox, right? But
Yes.
if I'm looking out far in the future, what I hope the user experience is going to be like is that our users can concentrate on what they actually want to do on the web. That might be browsing, looking for information, that might be shopping, like all kinds of activities. And they should do this with the knowledge that they're safe, both from a security point of view, but also from a privacy point of view, right? So whereas
Okay.
right now, we see that, what you mentioned earlier with the cookie consents, for example, that there's always a reminder that you somehow should think about your privacy, and it's not quite clear what to exactly do there and what are the trade-offs, like what happens when I say yes, what happens when I say no. So we want to kind of free up that mind space of our users and let them use the open web. And another important aspect is that the open web actually exists and is a thriving place, right? So content creators, website operators, they all need the ability to monetize. So we don't want to just optimize for privacy. We also don't want to just optimize for content creators. It's an and. It's privacy and ecosystem, which is very important to us.
This would be my next question then. What will change for web advertising?
Especially for advertisers, but also, and as I mentioned, anti-app use, other use cases of cookies, like a lot will change, right? Like because the cookies will eventually go away and will be, so website operators will have to migrate to those new APIs. And so just from a technical point of view, this is going to be a very visible change, like different from end users that hopefully get to see the same kinds of websites. For somebody who's actually implementing HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, there will be significant changes. However, it's also not unique. So over the course of how the web is developing, new APIs come and replace old ones. Like a very visible example might be, for example, Flash, which 5 years back or so was a dominant player on the websites, and we've now seen Adobe phase out Flash support. And so from that point of view, it's a natural evolution of the web. Yeah. And then the important part is like, will it still be good enough to monetize, right? Like, will it enable a thriving ecosystem? And I mean, that's an explicit goal of our development. And so we are also relying on feedback from partners, from other ad networks, from content creators that try out our proposals, give us feedback, and so we can iterate on them and try to strike a good balance between the ability to monetize and the ability to write a modern website and users' desire for more privacy.
Okay, and how would you answer people claiming that Google with this move is increasing even its market power? What would you say to them?
On the one hand, I would point at facts, right? Like we are in a very open process. We're working with other browser makers, with other ad networks, with content creators on finding a solution that works for everybody. But of course, we're also talking to regulators. So last week, for example, the UK Competition Authority published a report on them looking into the privacy sandbox. And we committed to a number of basic rules, which I would summarize as that we are we are also publicly committed to not self-preference here. So it's really important for us that we're building a level playing field for all players. And so I think kind of pointing at how we actually are developing the privacy sandbox in this very open process, and at the same time also pointing at our public commitments. That this would be how I would answer such a question.
So let's hope that this will all lead to a better and even more useful and more comfortable and safer internet, of course. Thank you, Jochen, for being our guest today. It was great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Safety First is produced by TÜV Süd. Technical support, Comcast. You will find all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. On Podigy or at tuvsud.com/podcast. Thanks for listening and stay safe.